Hello, FCS Nation. It's time for your show. I'm your host, Kevin Marshall. I'm coming to you this week from the lovely Bitterroot Valley of Montana. Joining me like he does each week is the co-host of this program, the quarterback of this program, Mr. Stone Labanowitz. And Stone is coming to you from his broadcast center in the Sunshine State of Florida. Well, Mr. Labanowitz, we started out with 24, and now we're down to 4. It was a really interesting week last week in the quarterfinals, sir.
Although I think chalk prevailed, but what it did was set us up with, in my opinion, the best 2 semifinals that we've gotten in a long time, because these rosters are so old and every single one of them thinks they can win a national championship.
In last week's action, number 1, Montana State, 52, number 8, Idaho, 19. We kind of looked for ways how this game was going to be different than the one that was played on October the 12th. It wasn't a whole lot different, Stone.
And we tried to talk about and bring to light ways that Idaho could contend and make this game interesting. And I think when we saw them score to make it 10-10, you thought, boom, yes, we got it. But Montana State, what they do is just wear you down and then continue to wear you down some more in the runs in that third and fourth quarter, as a lot of these teams who are beefy up front and have backfield members like Adam Jones, Tommy Mellott, who you're going to see run quarterback power. He ran the ball 14 times. Those runs in the third and fourth are going to start, instead of going for 3 and 4, go for 5 and 6. And then one's going to pop, and you're going to get explosive runs, and they stack up late in the second half of these games. They just ran away with this one, but to get a 50-burger dropped on you, and it hurt so bad that your head coach hit the portal the very next day, it was a schlacking from a Montana State team who's been doing the same thing to every single team on that schedule. They're unblemished.
Adam Jones had 4 rushing touchdowns, and like you said, Tommy Mellott, all he did was run for 131 yards. This was kind of a ho-hum win for Montana State, but give Idaho credit, they did score the first points that anybody has scored on Montana State in the first quarter all season.
That's what was interesting to me, is you saw Jason Eck kind of play the, kind of keep the cards close to his vest early on, but that sideline just couldn't contain themselves. And I also think that's another factor that goes into these games. You watch when that thing went level and you talked about the points being scored in the first. There was one team who had been there before, and there was one team who clearly hadn't been there before. And I think those are telltale signs, especially early in games, or where you can get the vibe that the seesaw is going to tilt the other way. And it was just about time to tilt after it went 10-10. And it did.
Number 2 seed, North Dakota State, 31. Number 7, Mercer, 7. The score here, Stone, I don't think was really indicative of this ball game. Some people called it boring. Some people said they didn't like the style. But I'll tell you this, everything we said about Mercer's defense was correct. They spent a lot of time flushing Cam Miller out of the pocket. They spent a lot of time in that North Dakota State backfield, and they spent a lot of time whipping the North Dakota State offensive line. I'm of the opinion now, Stone, that in the playoffs, this North Dakota State offensive line is not what we're used to seeing from them. We're used to seeing this bunch reestablish the line of scrimmage 2, 3, 4 yards down the field and getting on the second level. They're just not doing that this year, or at least right now. I don't know exactly what's going on there, but I don't feel like North Dakota State is a team anymore that can just line up and run the ball right at you and whip you.
You're damn right. I think that's the takeaway here, getting held to 3.2 yards a carry. That's eye-opening, and I think a lot of it has to do with this offense not being able to create or develop any rhythm in-game. Cam Miller is a gamer, and I think when you try to put things on a script for him, he plays worse. So as an offensive line, as a unit, you're always on your toes. You're always trying to figure things out. We've seen in the past that A-gap power, a lot of duo, and a lot of these guards kind of climb into that next level. They can't just sit here and do that, like you said. And this Mercer team, one of the best run-stopping groups in all of the subdivision, holding an NDSU team to a buck 33, and like I had already mentioned, 3.2 yards a carry. Oh yeah, your matchup next week, South Dakota State and the Jackrabbits, who are just foaming at the mouth. You kind of put all of your worst things on tape, and if I'm Jimmy Rogers, I called that Mercer staff up and said, I thank you guys so much, because you're going to give us the blueprint to whoop this Bison team, and I think that's exactly where South Dakota State starts. I don't know if Mark throws the ball once Saturday.
Well, you know, that would be music to my ears, right? I mean, you know, that would be my kind of time, y'all. My kind of time. Number 3, South Dakota State, 55. Number 6 seed, Incarnate Word, 14. I think that you summed this up the best, Stone Labanowitz, with what you tweeted. You said it wasn't a football game. It was abuse. And you, sir, you were right.
Oh, my God. I mean, this thing wasn't a game from start to finish. And I think I have the hardest time watching football games. And close your ears if you're of the generation that Kevin Marshall is, because I'm going to sound very soft. But I hate watching football games where players can't adjust to the temperature and adjust to the weather. I feel like the game becomes very boring because there's clearly one team with an advantage. And I'm not sitting here saying if the weather was warmer, Garnett Ward would have played better. But this was a no contest when the first ball was kicked off. Zach Calzada was freezing. This Incarnate Word team looked like a JV team from the first quarter, from the very first quarter. You thought they had been a little bit of life, and they turned the ball over inside that 5-yard line, and South Dakota State almost laughed at them. This one for Incarnate Word fans, and there are a good amount of them on Twitter, and they do come out, and now they're now back in hibernation after losing Zach Calzada to the portal. But this South Dakota State team just made a complete fool of them, made a complete fool of their conference, to become completely honest with you, because we've seen this Incarnate Word team get tested but never lost, and it just speaks to what I think the Southland is right now. But Mark Gronowski is throwing the football really well. He had a field day, obviously, what these guys are doing up front. But I think the strongest unit on this team, and it's a sneakily strong unit, is that defensive line. When you have guys like Jada Priest, and there are a few others that just wreak havoc. And we just talked about that Mercer defense and what they did to that North Dakota State offense. I think South Dakota State, I think Jacob DePriest, I think they're going to load this box up and force Canada to try to beat them over the top. And I don't think it's necessarily going to go that way. I think South Dakota State put really good things on tape against Incarnate Word, and I think the Bison put really bad things on tape. But Incarnate Word, you got to do a lot of soul searching here, and Giovanni McCoy's on the way, but I don't think it helps. You're outmatched in the trenches anytime you step into the playoffs, especially against a Valley team.
Number 4, South Dakota, 35. Number 5 seed UC Davis, 21. Stone, we both picked UC Davis to win this football game, mostly because we thought they'd ride on the back of Lane Larison all the way to the semifinals. But Larison got hurt. And to Davis's credit, Perez played a really good game backing him up, but he ain't Lane Larison. Nobody is. It's unfair to ask him to be that guy. But I hate it for Miles Hastings, the best quarterback in the history of UC Davis, and his last time we're going to see him in that UC Davis uniform, he threw 5 interceptions. And South Dakota, instead of getting behind last week, they jumped out in front this week, and Davis had to chase them all day long.
Yeah, although I'm ecstatic the Yotes came out of this thing victorious, I wish this game could be replayed. I don't think I would hope and wish for another result, or the opposite result, I should say. But this UC Davis team didn't get a fair shot, and I understand it's their own wrongdoing. You talked about Hastings turning the ball over 5 times. I think this Yotes team, I think the total came out to 6 turnovers. That's obviously a season best. It was ridiculous to watch both of these teams literally just put the ball on a plate of mashed potatoes and macaroni and some ham and hand it back to the other team and say, fine, here you go, you can have the ball on our own 30. They just kept doing it. It was a very bizarre game. And then Lane Larison goes out. If you're a UC Davis fan, you're gutted. He was the one that was going to milk some of the clock, kind of give you the edge in the time of possession battle here. And then all of a sudden, you're watching David Myers limp off the field and stand on the sideline for a few possessions. UC Davis didn't get a fair shot at this thing. I think if this game was replayed, it would have been a lot closer. But that can be said in pretty much every football game and every division, no matter where you play. I get it. I had a hard time watching this one, but nonetheless, South Dakota making history with their first semifinal appearance. We've been high on the Yotes. We knew Aiden Bauman could do it. This backfield, a couple of horses, and Travis Tice and Charles Pierre. We talk about Montana State's offensive line. Of course, we talk about the Jacks and the Bison's offensive line, but I think the Yotes have the best unit of the 4 teams that are left up front. And behind them, a signal caller who's played the most ball out of all of these guys in a little bit at the FBS level. This was at one point a schlacking, but I think this more so than Mercer and North Dakota State, this scoreline was not at all indicative of how this game played out.
UC Davis had 27 first downs, Stone. That's like a triple option offense. South Dakota had 18 first downs. And look, UC Davis did what they wanted to do. They did dominate the time of possession, 32-51 to 27-09. I just think that Davis just got kind of worn out, bro. And people who don't think that having a bye week is an advantage, you need your head examined, because it's funny how the teams who didn't have to play the first weekend are looking a whole lot fresher right now, Stone. But in the one ball game that didn't go really as expected, in the Celebration Bowl, Jackson State dominated South Carolina State 28-7. They just absolutely whipped the South Carolina State Bulldogs, Stone. And I thought that the guys up front on both sides of the ball for South Carolina State be too much for Jackson State, but it was exactly the opposite. They imposed their will upon them, and they went up and down the field on South Carolina State. Nobody had done that to them all season. It's time for us to take a break. When we come back, we'll have some news from around the subdivision. That's coming up. next, right here on FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. And we're back. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. Now time for some news from around the subdivision. And then a shock to just about everyone, I think. That came out of just about nowhere. We are now going to see, it was announced this week, that the Ivy League is going to participate in the FCS playoffs starting next season, the 2025 season. Stone, I have absolutely lambasted this conference for its hypocrisy for a decade. They would send all their other teams to NCAA postseason play except for football. And for the most part, I always thought it was because they didn't want to send their boys to Fargo and get absolutely blown out, or to Brookings or other places and get blown out by directional State U. Well, give them credit. Their athletes said they wanted it, and the Ivy League said, well, if you want it, let's do it. They're to be commended. I don't take back all the things I said before, but they're to be commended for stepping up, doing what their players want, and we're going to see if the Ivy League is as competitive as some people who cover FCS football who think that the sun gets up in the morning just to hear them crow. Those folks, they've been screaming it for years that this would be a top five seed. Well, you know what, y'all? We're going to find out in 2025. And I can't wait.
We're gonna find out. Like, we're going to find out. And I'm not gonna sit here and say, oh, damn it, I didn't want this to happen, because it was definitely overdue. And these kids deserve to compete for a national championship. But schools are gonna make a little bit of money. Student athletes wanna play. It's a match made in heaven until you gotta line up. Until you gotta line up against one of these seeded teams. And I will ask you this, Kev, looking at this year's 24-team field, now that the Ivy League is let in, which teams this year are not making the cut and not competing in the FCS playoffs?
Well, Stone, I'm glad you asked, because this year it would have been a team like Tennessee Martin, who all they did in the first round was go on the road and destroy New Hampshire, beat them by like five touchdowns, and it could have been worse. And then played Montana State on the road in a climate that's not what they're normally used to there in Tennessee, about as well as anybody has in FCS all season. So, I mean, you look at that and you think, do I want to see Tennessee Martin or do I want to see Harvard? I think people know what my answer to that is.
I do think it'll bring more eyes, and I'm glad that these fan bases now get to participate with us on Twitter so we can talk trash back and forth.
In coaching news from around the subdivision, well, Norfolk State, they did a thing, Stone. Michael Vick, the former Atlanta Falcons quarterback, is going to be the new head coach at Norfolk State, and that's something, y'all. He has no coaching experience, but he has a big name and has some issues that come along with it. But I'm of the mind that dude owned it and then did his time, and he's been a solid citizen since those incidents occurred. So I got no problem with him wanting to get into coaching. I hope he surrounds himself with very knowledgeable and experienced seasoned coaching staff. I believe he will. That might end up being the home run hire of the decade for Norfolk State. We'll see. What do you think about Norfolk State hiring Michael Vick, Stone?
I'm excited. I think it's a ripe spot, too, with this team being 4-8 last season, and he's back in Virginia. We obviously know what he did in that state and how dynamic of a player he was, so if he has a Rolodex there and he understands the fertile recruiting grounds of players that were in his locker room at VT and what schools they came from, he'll have kind of an edge in the recruiting space, which we know has just completely opened its doors wide open, so anything goes. So if Mike Vick can convince alumni, those board members, that school's president, to throw a little bit of money into the mix, this team won't be 4-8. And I think offensively, I'm excited to see what he does with this team. I think first and foremost, we have to pay attention to who he hires on that staff. If he brings in another name, we're really interested. Then we know Mike Vick really means business. I'm super excited for this one, though, and I think a lot of those top recruits, and I put air quotes around top recruits, because you can be a 2 or 3-star guy who's not going to that FBS level. They're going to look at Norfolk State before they decide to leave the state of Virginia. So for that, I'm excited, and I think good things are on the horizon for Mike Vick and Norfolk State. I love it.
And in a surprising ruling this week, a court has ruled that JUCO time does not affect your NCAA clock. And that's a very interesting ruling, Stone, because you can go to JUCO for 2 years and then cycle into a Division I school as a true freshman, not as a junior. And this might just change how college football is done and how it's administrated. Everybody was saying that FCS was going to be the minor league for the FBS, but this might be the minor league for the entire Division I that we have seen birth this week in a courtroom. Not quite sure how to feel about it, but if this ruling holds up, I just want to ask you, Stone, you have some JUCO experience. Do you know anybody who you and I could start a JUCO with? Because somebody's going to clean up on this deal right here.
That's not a bad idea, man. I mean, you got to come down to sunny South Florida. We can get this thing popping. Like you said, it's confusing. I would first make the statement that until further information comes out, I would hold off on your hyperbolic opinions, to be honest with you, because there's a lot more that we need to know about this. I will tell you this, raise your hand if you're looking forward to more 25, 26, 27-year-olds beating up on some 18-year-olds. Woohoo! Woohoo! Here's what I will say in all seriousness, though. It's odd from a timing perspective. This generation of athletes at the high school level, I don't think are tough enough to come out of high school and go to the junior college level. I don't think that they can put their ego aside and their pride aside and actually go develop themselves. So this has become a big giant mess. I don't necessarily think the NCAA has thought this one all the way through. And like I said at first, I'm not looking forward to 25-year-olds beating up on 18-year-olds any longer. Thought we were kind of getting away from that as all of these COVID kids are graduating, but turning up the intensity here. So more headaches on the way.
Here are the finalists for the 2024 Bill Schwanke Award for FCS Football Radio Broadcaster of the Year. Keaton Gillooglie, the voice of the Montana State Bobcats. Mark Willoughby, the voice of the Southeastern Louisiana Lions. Rick Cameron, the voice of the Mercer Bears. Davis Gregory, the voice of the UT Martin Skyhawks. And Mr. Bob Black, voice of the Richmond Spiders. Congratulations to those five gentlemen for being finalists for the Bill Schwanke Award for FCS Radio Broadcaster of the Year. We'll be right back. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network.
Ian Bauman down to a knee, and it's high fives all around, and the Coyotes are defeating UC Davis 35-21, and South Dakota, for the first time in program history, is on to the semifinals of the FCS playoffs.
Thanks for sticking with us during the break. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. It is that time of the week. This one right here was very much anticipated and very much is my favorite of the entire season right now. We have two honorary captains of the week. Chris Schenkel, managing partner up there in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Chris Schenkel, he runs the show here. He spearheaded this whole thing, and I will ask him a few questions about that and kind of where the passion stands in year two. And alongside him, signal caller, the South Dakota, the Yotes, Aiden Bauman. Chris, I'll start with you. Thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to hop on FCS Nation. This is a huge week for all of us.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate being here. Always fun.
And Aiden, to you as well, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule. Probably the biggest week in South Dakota Coyotes history. And you are spending your time with myself and Chris and FCS Nation. So for that, I thank you.
Yeah, thank you again for having me. It's awesome.
The Yotes, they're on ABC this weekend. This is a semifinal matchup of two colossals. I think both semifinal matchups are just giants going at it, button face masks. But 2:30 p.m. Central Time is the kick. Heading to Bozeman. No more dome to play in, Aiden. You get to go out there and live it up in the December weather. I don't know, as we stand currently, what the forecast looks like. You can kind of tell us. I'm sure that's a part of your scouting report, but a little colder than it has been at this point in the playoff run. So excited for that one. It's South Dakota. It's Montana State for a chance to play in Frisco, Texas, a place that Aiden is oh so familiar with. Aiden actually was with us in Frisco this time last year, hoisting the Lemon Trophy. And if he wins this game, he'll be in Frisco, Texas, looking for two trophies. Aiden's raised about $5,000. Well, over $5,000 in this entire thing. You hear me talk about this being year two. Year one, we raised about $50,000. This year, as we stand right now, we're well over that mark, and we are just getting started. Some exciting things on the horizon. Aiden, I want to ask you this right off the bat. What's been the biggest difference in this partnership for you last season to now?
Yeah, I think, you know, just like you said, getting into the second year of it, you know, it was something super special to be a part of last year, just seeing, you know, the difference that we can make. And, you know, honestly, you know, Chris can attest to it too. We didn't really know what was going to happen with it last year. You know, it was you know, the building blocks, but just to see where it's gone this year, it's special. You know, like you said, I mean, at this point last year for me, I think I was maybe at $1,000, if that. And you know, we're surpassing that right now, and a lot of guys have done a great job of it. I think the biggest difference is just, you know, Chris and I's relationship has you know, really expanded. You know, got to know him really well. Did the internship with Northwestern this past summer, and got to know, you know, everyone there really well. So just to kind of be able to spitball ideas back and forth about, you know, what we can do to make this thing, you know, at the next level. Just all those different things have made a big difference this year.
And Chris, what has Aiden done? How big of a role has he played in getting us to where we are right now in this initiative? How has he kind of led the way in this entire thing? I hear Aiden's name come up all the time. We're constantly talking about him and what he's doing for this entire thing. But, you know, how big of a role has he played in this entire challenge?
Well, first and foremost, he's always ready to do whatever we ask, which we try to limit, but he's always like, what's next? Let's make, he's dead on. He's like, how can we make this bigger? What can I do? What can I do? So behind the scenes, Aiden, you probably don't even know that much of it, but we talk about you all the time, because right out of the gate, Aiden was bought in. And I did, we sat down. I'm like, I don't know what this is going to turn out to be. It feels really good what we can do for the kids and where we can raise awareness around cancer research for children, and support the families. And we had talked about that, talked about what it does other than stats. And I think that was always a major play into it, of just what is the impact that you can create as a player and do something pretty cool with it. From there, you know, we go to, there's 12 schools around the country that are involved in this. And we just, a lot of it is when we're talking to the Northwestern Mutual leadership teams, we talk about Aiden and the buy-in from the get-go and the care about it and how much it means to those student athletes. And for our potential, he's been a leader. He became, as Aiden said, he became a college financial rep with us, had a big impact this summer, learned a lot. And we talk about that because that's what we're looking for. We're looking for great people to come into our organization. And he's led in that way too, because he became very interested in what we do, very interested in our culture and our people. So, and that's what we're looking for at Northwestern Mutual. And he's been a huge part of that from both sides.
You just triggered something in my mind, Chris, and I want to jump to it. It was something that I wanted to get to almost in the back half, but let's just delve right into this. It's perfect segue. Aiden, there was an article written earlier this year, and I don't expect you to kind of consume yourself with social media articles written, whether they're positive or negative, but the Football Scoop put out an article that what we're doing, in the author's words, is the best, the most organic and authentic NIL deal in all of college football. And I think what makes it differently is how bought in our players are to Northwestern Mutual and guys like Chris Schenkel. And you interned this past summer, so I'm going to ask you about that. You got guys for South Dakota State and that Jackrabbit squad of last season, Quentin Hicks and Brian Williams, who were also interns that now actually run full-time practices with Northwestern Mutual. Kind of talk about last summer and that internship program and kind of what made you make the decision to be a part of it.
Yeah, you know, I think the culture and everything over there at Northwestern is second to none. You know, they always say they love to bring athletes in, and that's what it is. It's a team that's super competitive. And when you're an athlete, you know, competition is what you live for, you know, and you can't really find that, you know, a lot of places. So, yeah, I thought it would be a really, really cool opportunity, a really great learning experience for me. And it was, you know, truthfully, if I look back, I got married this past summer, so I didn't get to put every ounce of effort that I wanted to into it. But I know definitely if I cycle back to that, it's going to be a great opportunity for me and would recommend it to a lot of people.
Aiden, let's talk a little bit of ball. I mean, you guys are contending for a chance to play in the national championship on Saturday. Has it settled in? I don't want you to kind of lose that mindset, but have you had a chance to kind of step back and really take all of this in and realize what the hell is happening?
Yeah, you know, it's a special team. It's a special thing to be a part of. But, you know, like you said, at the end of the day, just focus on this week, same preparation as every week. But I mean, at the end of the day, it is really special to be a part of a really cool team like this.
You know, when you watch games from the couch, because that's what me and Chris have to do nowadays, you obviously are still able to pad up. But you know, one of the coolest things is to see pregame, whether the broadcast goes inside a locker room and hears a coach's pregame speech. And I think the casual fan says, oh, they say a lot of the same things, right? It's a lot of the rah, rah. But Nielsen just seems a little different. I want to know if his message has changed up until this very moment from week one, or is it been the exact same thing that he's preaching to you? And if the answer is one or the other, kind of what is that message?
Yeah, I mean, so truthfully, it used to be no excuses win. That was our thing for a long time. But We had the year we did last year, and it was one of the best in Division One history for the school, but we weren't satisfied at all. You know what I mean? And so from day one, right when we got back in the winter, it was, what's our mission to win a championship? And, we got a share for the Missouri Valley Conference for the first time in school history, but, we're not done. That's still our mission every single day. We end every meeting with that. We end every practice with that. And guys don't just say it. It's not something we just throw around. Like, we believe that, and you have to if you want to be a good team.
When you made the jump from Iowa State, is this the exact reason why you did that? Is there something when you made that decision that want to go take this team to a national championship? Do you feel satisfied in that regard? Or to answer, I think, a lot of Yotes fans' questions, was that why you made the decision to come here?
Yeah, I mean, I think when, going through the whole process, I think I'd start by saying, Josh Rosenthal, had a great relationship with him. He was a coach here that was at Iowa State as well. And then familiarity with the area. My dad grew up around here, so I knew the area very well. But ultimately, like you said, this is a program that obviously, my first year here, it was a little rough, but I feel like I could sense, how special we could be. You talk about specific guys, you got the Carter Bells, the Travis Tices, the JJ Galbraiths and umpteen more guys, but guys that have experience, but more so belief and the dedication to make a team great. I feel like I saw that, coming in here.
It's interesting you talk about your freshman year, and I don't want to sit here and call things a mess, but obviously the train wasn't on the tracks as much as it is right now. And Chris, I'll ask you, what's been the most noticeable difference in this Coyotes football team from a few years ago when Aiden was a freshman till right now?
One, I think they've become more solid in what they're doing. And what I mean by that, I guess defensively, your defense is holding into games, which puts the offense in a position that it takes pressure off. So I think once that defense started changing, the offense started clicking with it. Once Aiden got a running game and that got going, and that started happening last year big time, I think that made a big difference as well. So you start establishing some defense, which takes pressure off, and all of a sudden you got room to move. So I think that's probably been the biggest change.
It's an awesome call out there. And kind of talk about your defense a little bit. Of course, I'll get to the Carter Bells and I'll get to the Travis Tices, all the skill players, but your defense has really stepped up, and it's a really good point brought up by Chris. You're walking into a Montana State team who likes to play the style of football that you're used to in the Missouri Valley, but you're confident in your defense. You guys have been good against the run. I mean, Maquise Gracie, I mean, you guys got guys on that front that not only fill up stat sheets, but really pop out on tape. And when you're watching on TV, that it's pretty obvious that on any given Saturday, your defense can lead you to a victory, and you and your offense can lead you to a victory. But what has that defense kind of meant to you as a team this season?
Yeah, it's been huge, and I've said it so many times, but just having that backbone of knowing, like, you don't have to be perfect offensively. I mean, that's what you strive for, and perfection truthfully isn't real, but you always strive for it, but just knowing that, like, you have the best defense in the country. Our red zone defense, I've said it so many times, but it's second to none. I mean, their bend don't break. You'll give up a 20-yard gain here and there, whatever, but they know when to lock in, and they always do it. Obviously, you got, like you said, Maquise Grace and all those guys up front, are linebackers, are secondary. I mean, just everybody's clicking right now, and they're doing really well out there.
And offensively, skill players at the Wazoo, and I feel like you guys are so dangerous because you're so old, and I don't mean that as a joke. I mean, you guys are so tenured. You guys have been around the block, and you can tell when you find the end zone, your guys' reactions. It's like you've been there before. And a lot of teams you see kind of will go all out. You see teams kind of standing on their head in an end zone, and a lot of other coaches, right? They'll point and say, this team hasn't been in that position before, but you guys are playing football like you belong here, and your underdog is going to this game Saturday. But I get the sense that you don't think you are. Does your locker room or you specifically think that you guys are underdogs going into this game, or do you feel the complete opposite?
I mean, in all seriousness, there's been a lot of games where everyone has said that they don't think we're going to win, we're underdogs, everything like that. Obviously, the noise never gets to us, but we're just going in the same way we do every single week. I mean, we know what our game plan is. We master it every single day. And like you said, we got guys with experience. We have guys that have played in big games. We got guys that are fifth and sixth year seniors that understand what it's going to take to win a game. So I'd say yes, we're very confident.
What's your relationship right now with Coach Nielsen? A pretty badass picture of you. I don't know if it was last week or the week prior, but your arm around him was a huge game. I think it was, I'm lying, I know what game it was. You took the Bison out on your home turf, and you throw your arm around your head coach and probably the filthiest coach's outfit in all of college football, just the OG sweater. What's your relationship right now with Nielsen, and how much has he meant to you as a person, on and off the field, both?
Yeah, love Coach Nielsen. You know, he's not a rah-rah guy. He's not the guy that's gonna scream his head off for you guys. But you know, we know the belief and confidence that he has in us, and it allows us to go play with confidence. He's believed in me from day one. He's always been in my corner, and beyond blessed to have him as my coach.
Before we get on out of here, I'm handing you the microphone in front of you as an audience of every single South Dakota Coyotes fans that every single South Dakota Coyotes fan that exists. Your message to them leading into game day is what?
Be ready. It's going to be a big game. You know, this team is special. Like you said earlier, it's something that, you know, the Coyotes have never done. So, you know, enjoy it. We're going to pour our hearts out and give everything we got for this team.
ABC ESPN, you're going to see a front and center this Saturday. 2:30 kickoff time. Of course, that's Central in Bozeman, Montana. You got a giant standing in front of you, Tommy Mellott, and that Montana State squad. They're good themselves. But Aiden, I think everybody listening right now knows that you guys are 100% a bona fide contender and a team that thinks and has been playing football like they can win a national championship. So I wish you the best of luck. But before we get out of here, FCSNationRadio.com on the right-hand side of the screen. If you're looking for ways to get involved, if Aiden has now pushed you to make an impact and make a difference with us, like I said, FCSNationRadio.com on the right-hand side of the screen. Alex's Lemonade Stand has its own wing of the website that we've dedicated to and for. Donate, check the standings, or make a pledge. You'll see the list of all 12 of our athletes and what universities they represent. Chris, there's also another way. It does take some physical effort, but that fans can donate without taking actual money out of their wallets. How's that?
They can do the Lemon Top Challenge. So if you post a picture of yourself with the lemon balanced on top of your head and you hashtag Lemon Top Challenge, hashtag your school, in this case, Go Yotes, to support Aiden Bauman. So you're hashtagging Lemon Top Challenge and Go Yotes. Also, you would tag Northwestern Mutual Financial and Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation. So hashtag. And so once you do that, Northwestern Mutual is going to donate $10 on three different platforms. So if you put it out on X, if you put it out on Instagram, or if you put it out on Facebook, or all three, for each one, we will donate $10. So up to $30 just to do the Lemon Top Challenge.
Generosity coming from every which way. On Alex's Lemonade Stand's behalf, Northwestern Mutual's behalf, Aiden Bauman and the other 11 athletes' behalf, and FCS Nation, of course, we're here to do whatever we possibly can. Like I started this, I want to end it the same exact way. Chris, thank you so much for giving the show some time this week. You've meant so much to myself and Kevin Marshall and to FCS Nation, to be honest with you, because it's pretty obvious who leads the way in this entire thing. So for that, I thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And Aiden, to you, a big thank you, and also a bigger good luck. And FCS Nation is rooting for you, and we're super excited. Thank you, and also good luck.
Appreciate it, Stone. Thanks again.
Thanks for sticking with us during the break. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. Want to thank Aiden Bauman and Chris Schenkel for being with us in the last segment. Aiden's our honorary captain of the week. Awesome that he made time in the week before an FCS semifinal game. Shows you his commitment to what we're doing to end childhood cancer in our time in partnership with Northwestern Mutual and Alex's Lemonade Stand. Well, Stoneman, got two semifinal games to get to in a short time to get there. Let's just get right to it. Whale of a ball game right here, Stone. Number four, South Dakota, is going to be at number one, Montana State. This one intrigues me, Stone, because South Dakota's defense has given up some points lately, including some points in these playoffs. But they've made the plays when they've absolutely had to. So there's a sense of something about this Yotes team that's special. And this Montana State team, well, they've had that in spades all year long, Stone. You crowned them in the preseason show as your favorite to win the national championship. When I look at this one, I think that the Yotes have got to start fast, just like they did last week against UC Davis. This is a team, Montana State, who doesn't give up points in the first quarter. The first time anybody scored on them in the first quarter all season was last week, and they went on to win that game by 5 touchdowns. But for the Yotes, you've got to start quickly. You've got to make Montana State maybe try to get away from what they want to do a little bit. Although even when they're down, they don't really get away from what it is they want to do. If y'all remember back to that New Mexico State game. But that's your recipe for victory. The Montana State defense is going to give you some big plays in the passing game. You're going to have to make them if you're the Yotes, Stone. You've got to make those plays. And for Montana State, Tommy Mellott, that young man, we've watched him grow over these years. He's been the quarterback there for the Bobcats. that's Adam Jones in the backfield. The other guys in that stable, Scott-Trey Humphrey, if he's healthy. They say he took some reps this week. He should be back. But the unsung group for Montana State, the offensive line gets a lot of love, but it's that defense and that defensive line. Those guys have really controlled the line of scrimmage in their playoff games. And they've taken everybody's offense right out of what it is they want to do. If you're the Yotes, start fast, be able to run the football, and just make Montana State uncomfortable. There aren't a lot of people who've been able to do that this year.
Yeah, you got to play Montana State's game better than Montana State. I know, a very tall task. But you're talking about a Yotes team who's run the rock for 220 yards plus per game. They play football in the Missouri Valley Football Conference. So I think if you're South Dakota, contrary to what a lot of people think, I think they come out of the locker room and that first ball is kicked off trying to establish the run because they know what they have on the defensive front. Guys like Marquise Grace. Marquise Grace leads the Valley, almost 10 sacks on the year. Where I do think the Yotes have an edge here is with Aiden Bauman. I'm not going to sit here and say Aiden Bauman's a better quarterback than Tommy Mellott because I don't necessarily think Tommy Mellott's even a quarterback. I think he's an athlete. And I'm not ever going to be the guy, as a lot of people do with Lamar Jackson, and point to him and say he's a running back. I'm not calling Tommy Mellott a running back, but on those third and 12 situations, or let alone those second and two, where you can really go long stretch, play action, take shots down the field with like full progression slides and over routes. When you get into the semifinals or late in the playoffs and you're playing a team with really good defensive front, those second and twos and those third and threes aren't going to be gimmies. You're going to see guys like, I've shouted him out twice already, Marquise Grace kind of stand up in this Yotes defensive front. Put you in a third and five. Create tackles for losses to put you in those spots. And there will be times in this game where Tommy Mellott is asked to convert a tough third down. And I don't necessarily think he has the ability to do so. Now, there will be third downs where Tommy does drop back and tuck the ball and go and move the chains because that's what he does best. But I think Aiden Bauman is somebody who's been so consistent in the drop back pass, who's been so dangerous off of play action, where I think they won't be afraid to take their shots. And that's all because Travis Tyson, Charles Pierre set them up. So I think this one's intriguing. I don't necessarily like this 7.5 point spread because I think South Dakota matches up pretty nicely with them. I'm interested in every aspect of this football game, Kev.
It was a huge deal for the Yotes to get J.J. Galbraith back last week. What does that mean for a quarterback when you have a tight end who you can put in the slot? You can even split him out wide. And if he's on a linebacker, it's a mismatch.
I think what he brings to this team is just another layer that a defensive coordinator, a secondary coach, and a linebacker coach have to really watch film and prepare for. So I think teams treat it like a wildcat when you bring a guy like that back into the lineup. And I also think it helps that he doesn't have film in the last month and he just played one game. You saw that he has six catches. That speaks furthermore to him being in the game plan, right? Those eight or nine plays, more targets than he had receptions, obviously 45 yards, but he found pay dirt twice, and that's important. I think Nielsen and staff put an emphasis when JJ is healthy on getting him the football, and like I mentioned, it's just another layer that a defensive coordinator has to prepare for coming into a game.
Number three, South Dakota State's at number two, North Dakota State. Well, we know what we saw the last time these two teams met when they played for that Dakota marker stone, and it was an ugly football game, one that I know you didn't like very much at all, but it was probably the worst game Mark Gronowski's played as a Jackrabbit. Do you agree?
100%. I mean, I don't know necessarily in his career, but this season by a long shot.
Well, he got happy feet. He was trying to get out of the pocket, and they sort of, I think, told him after that ball game, stay in the pocket. You're much more effective there, and he has, and his numbers have gone up dramatically. But we discussed how NDSU isn't really the team right now who is going to line up against a good defense and run the ball for 275 yards like we're used to seeing. But I think the Jackrabbits are. I think this is a situation where, man, South Dakota State might go to North Dakota State and out North Dakota State, North Dakota State, which is what I think we'll see here. And I like the backs out of the backfield, that stable they got, and Griffin Wilde. He's going to be healthy. He's going to be the home run hitter for them in this ball game. And I like Amar and him to make a couple of big plays in this one. That'll be all the difference.
I agree with you. I think Amar and Griffin Wilde have the ability with their explosive playability to really turn this game upside down. And I'm confident in saying this, if Mark Gronowski played good football game, an average Mark Gronowski football game earlier in the season, they probably win the rock. But he didn't. You talked about happy feet. He was pressured. He probably threw more footballs out of bounds than he has in any game in his career. That's a stat I don't necessarily know how to look up, but I bet it's true just by watching it. And you've watched Mark since then really find a rhythm and really get a sense of who his guys are and really when to take the top off. And I think I always talk about when we're previewing North Dakota State Bison games, this low-hanging quarters. They play this cover four where they like to have those two safeties sitting at 8, 9, 10 yards, ready to run the alley, adding more guys to the box two or three plays post-snap. Griffin Wilde's been dangerous in those situations. He's caught post after post after post. Griffin Wilde in a post is going to be in the openers here. I do think Amar Johnson and Griffin Wilde are the difference in this game because Pulisic and Jimmy Rogers, they're going to butt face mask. They talk about dragging each other into deep water or swampy waters, whatever that quote that has run wild and has all these Dakota fans in a frenzy. I think both of them try to establish the run, but they're going to come into a stalemate, and whoever has the better skill players will prevail in this thing. And I think the obvious choice here is South Dakota State, and their offense is playing a lot better than Cam Hill and the Bison as we sit right here, right now.
Both of these semifinal games will be on ABC television. All to draw some numbers. We're all looking forward to it. And this time next week, when we get all together again, we'll know who's going to play for all the marbles down there in Frisco, Texas, the national championship on 6 January 2025. We'll be right back. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network.
You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network.
Well, we previewed them, and now we're going to pick them. It's the pick segment where Stone Labanowitz and I go head-to-head, and we pick the games taking place this week, and we only got two of them, y'all. We're here for the FCS National Semifinals. First game up, number four, South Dakota, is at number one, Montana State.
This game just screams banger. This game just screams popcorn matchup. You have two teams built similar in structure, two teams who want to run the football, so I don't see this being a high-scoring affair. I see this being a game when it's all said and done, and when the dust settles, that whoever has more explosive plays wins this thing. And I don't necessarily know where it's going to come from. Very hard actually having to pick a winner because I do love Aiden Bauman. And you heard a lot of the things that he had to say in our interview talking about the message that Bob Nielsen has been preaching to his team. You heard Aiden talking about his message to the team. It's a very old roster up in Vermilion, and it's also a very old roster in Bozeman. So I think we're due for a good one here. I do think the Oats are able to cover the spread. I just don't think they can come out of this thing victorious. Going to Bobcats, and I hope, and nobody up in Vermilion, and I hope nobody a part of that Bauman camp is listening right now, but give me Montana State 27-20.
Y'all, I'm excited for this one. The Yotes are a bit of an enigma on the defense side of the ball, but like I mentioned before, they've made the plays when they've absolutely had to make them on defense. And Aiden Bauman is the most underrated quarterback in all of FCS. He is steady and unshakable, and he's going to need to be all of those things in front of that sellout crowd in Bozeman, y'all. The Bobcat defense will give up some big plays in the passing game, and the Yotes, they must make those plays to stay in the ball game. Defense needs to make the Bobcats kick field goal and not extra points. Long, sustained drives are needed, and the Yotes have to be able to run the football. They have got to be able to control the clock, as Stone mentioned in the preview segment. And for the Cats, well, they want to run the ball and then run it some more and then run it some more. Question is, can they against that physical Yotes defense? The offensive line for Montana State is a nasty, mean-spirited group, and they play like it. They do such a good job of keeping plays going and letting Tommy find a lane to run in when it all breaks down and he's flushed out of the pocket. Wow, I just spoke a long time about Montana State before I mentioned Tommy Mellott. Wasn't expecting that even for me, but it's hard not to think he'll be the difference here. I believe he will. Take number one, Montana State to advance to Frisco in the national championship game. Cats win 31-24.
Something that sticks out to me, Kev, I think there's one team they played this season that likes to run their quarterback a lot, and that team specifically had some success, and that is, oh yeah, the North Dakota State Bison squad. Cam Miller that game, 19 carries for 82 yards and a score. Now, the Oats won that game, heroic fashion, comeback kid Aiden Bauman, but this is a double-edged sword when you look at this and go watch some tape, and I'm going to go crack that tape a few more times and watch what Cam Miller did and how they kind of schemed up him using his legs, because obviously that's all they want to do with Tommy Mellott. I think you have the tape as far as the quarterback sweeps, the powers, the counters you see on short, down, and distance situations. They are going to have something for Tommy.
Number three, South Dakota State is at number two, North Dakota State.
I'm hoping this one's not like the one we saw prior when they were battling it out. Who's going to take the rock home with them? Because I've said it twice now on FCS Nation that it felt like a Service Academy game. Nobody wanted to give anybody any bit of leeway. They both wanted to establish the run. They both played really stubborn football. I don't necessarily see that being the case here because I think Mark Gronowski plays a cleaner game. And if he does, like I mentioned in the preview segment, hits Griffin Wildy down the field for some of those 40-plus yard balls. I mean, they're going to take their shots. They do every single week with him. This is the defensive structure, a lot of the cover four, where you're going to see it. If they do find success with that and Mark is in rhythm, doesn't have that happy feet, isn't getting flushed outside of the hashes, I think South Dakota State blows them out. I think this is a get-right spot for them, and I think there's not a team in the country currently playing as good a football collectively on both sides of the ball as the Jackrabbits. As funny as that sounds, this team won back-to-back national championships, but I do see a blowout on the card here. Give me the Jackrabbits 38-21 to advance to Frisco, Kev.
Well, I don't know who's going to be in the deep part of the swamp in a 28-23 game, but Stone, you and I are from a pretty swampy part of the country, meet a low country of South Carolina, and you from the sunshine state of Florida. I wasn't aware there was a deep end or a shallow end. I just know that gators live in the swamp and I don't want to go there.
Yeah, I didn't really see where it related to the game at all. I didn't find any of the parallels, but it sure got Jackson, it sure got Bison fans up in a heap about it. But I one thing apart, that quote from Tim Polasek scares me. It seems like they're going to play the same game. It almost is like a battle of the wills. Like, we're going to drag you into deep waters. Kevin, what could that possibly mean with how we know how North Dakota State plays football and how we know how South Dakota State plays football? What could "we want to drag you into deep waters" even mean?
That they want to push you into death roll, Stone, like a gator does. A gator don't eat you right away, Stone. He rolls you over in the death roll and then stuffs you under a log and comes back later and eats you in segment. That's what I think he's talking about. Death of the small cuts over and over and over again. The four-yard run, followed by the four-yard run, followed by the four-yard run. Move the chains. I just don't think they got the horses up front to do it, Stone. I think South Dakota State does. I think South Dakota State does, and I think that they're going to be hoisted on their own petard there.
You're exactly right. Like, they don't have the luxury to do that. They don't have the luxury to drag you into deep waters. I mean, Mercer just exposed you to 3 yards of carry. So you talked about 4-4. They didn't even get that against Mercer. What makes Polasek think they can do that against South Dakota State? It was confusing, the quote was, but I guess if that's the mentality and the energy you're trying to bring during game week for that, I guess I get it.
Jackrabbits and their fans, they've been calling for all the smoke, y'all, since they lost to Dakota Marker there in Fargo earlier in the season. Well, y'all got it. It's going to be interesting to see if North Dakota State can run the football. The Bison offensive line hasn't been all that good during these playoffs at getting that push up front like we're so accustomed to seeing from them. They've been ineffective running the football. And look, Brown has had a toe injury, which kind of slowed him down a little bit. I understand that, but they just haven't been getting that push up front. Cam Miller can, and he has carried this team on his back this season, and I expect another Herculean effort from him. That's always going to be there. And the Jackrabbits, like I mentioned before, they're going to try to out NDSU here, I believe. Gronowski won't have another bad game like he did in the first meeting. He'll stay in that pocket, and he'll lead his team. Amar Johnson and Griffin Wildy, they'll make a couple of big plays, and the Jackrabbits will win and return to Frisco. Take number three, South Dakota State, at number two, North Dakota State. Jackrabbits win 28-23. And that brings us to the end of another episode of FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. FCS Nation is co-hosted by Mr. Stone Labanowitz, produced by Mr. Sam Cittadini. I'm executive producer and host Kevin Marshall, thanking you for making FCS Nation a small part of your football week. Like always do, y'all, I'd like to remind you that life's a lot like football. You play by the rules and the penalties won't kill you. Until next week, so long, everybody.
You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network.